Very nice introduction. And I'd also like to thank Gifra for inviting me here and giving me the chance to visit this very nice place and tell you about my work. And before I'm going to do that, I want to acknowledge my collaborators on these things. So that's Sean Hartnell at Stanford and Subir Sajdev and Brian Swingle at Harvard. And I'm going to tell you about charge fractionalization and just realize missing the most important part. So I'm going to tell you about charge fractionalization and entanglement entropy in compressible phases in holography. So the motivation behind this work is a key challenge that we're facing in condensed matter physics, which is to find techniques to describe strongly interacting systems of electrons. So over the past decades, there have been many experiments that reveal unusual physics of systems that we think are governed by the strongly interacting electrons. But the theoretical understanding of these systems is lagging far behind, mainly because the conventional techniques that we have in condensed matter physics are either unreliable or they simply do not work. And so in recent years, holography has been put forward as possibly very powerful here because it provides a duality between a strongly interacting theory on the one hand and a weakly interacting theory on the other hand. And so sort of the key question driving this field is to try and understand whether holography can indeed be used as a tool to understand condensed matter systems. And so in this talk, I want to focus on compressible phases at zero temperature. And it turns out that these compressible phases arise very naturally in holography. And whereas in condensed matter physics, we actually only know of a few compressible phases. So what we want to know is what are these compressible phases in holography? And to answer this question, we set out to explore some tools to characterize these phases. And that's basically what I want to talk about today. So I'll first define more precisely what I mean by a compressible phase. And I'll discuss the sort of the key examples in condensed matter physics, and then I'll move to compressible phases in holography. And then the bulk of the talk is sort of in two parts that are both dedicated to these characterizing features that we're trying to identify to understand compressible phases in holography. And so the first part will be about charge fractionalization. And the second part will be about holographic entanglement entropy for these phases. And then I'll tie back these results to the compressible phases in condensed matter physics and discuss whether there's a connection. And then I'll end with some recent developments and some outlook. Okay, so of course, a key example of a compressible phase in condensed matter physics is the Fermi liquid. But if more generally I want to define what I mean by a compressible phase, let me restrict to dimensions greater than one and impose translational invariance. And then a compressible phase is defined by having a globally conserved U1 charge, Q, whose expectation value varies smoothly as a function of some chemical potential. So dQ, dμ is non-zero. So if this is a little bit abstract, just think of a Fermi gas, where you have some band, which is populated up to the Fermi energy. And now if you change the chemical potential a little bit, you will occupy more states or deplete some state. And so this state changes the overall charge in your system. And so dQ, dμ is non-zero in this case. Whereas if you think of a band insulator where your chemical potential lies within the gap, then changing the chemical potential doesn't change the number of states that's occupied, and so it doesn't change the charge. So so that's a sort of a trivial example of an incompressible phase. Okay, so in condensed matter physics, we basically distinguish three types of compressible phases. So one is the celebrated Fermi liquid, which is, of course, the discovery of Landau that a system of interacting electrons can be smoothly connected, adiabatically connected to the free Fermi gas, even for relatively strong interactions. And this Fermi liquid is characterized by a Fermi surface, which is defined as the poles in a single particle green function. And and it has long-lived quasi-particles. And its key experimental features are that it has a T-squared resistivity and that the specific heat is a linear function of the temperature. Now, in contrast, the non-Fermi liquid is a truly strongly interacting theory where typically the fermions are thought to be coupled to some emergent dynamical gauge field, which can arise, for example, due to some constraint that you have to impose when you do a slave particle construction. And these systems are believed still to have a Fermi surface, where now this is defined by the singularity in the single particle Green's function. But the notion of some well-defined quasi-particle actually breaks down. And then finally, you could imagine having a combination of these two cases, and this is referred to as the FL star phase, or the fractionalized Fermi liquid. And so the physics of these different phases can be very different, but they all share this feature that they have some Fermi surface. And that's basically what Lovinger theorem tells you, because that relates the total charge in the system to the area A enclosed by the Fermi surface. And so this Fermi surface, as I said, is the place in momentum space where the Green's function has a singularity. And so basically what I want you to remember for this talk is that in condensed matter systems, we think that compressible phases have Fermi surfaces. And I will come back to this towards the end of the talk. Okay, so now let me turn to compressible phases in holography. So holography, or also sometimes called ADS, CFT duality, is a duality that's developed in the context of string theory, and it relates two theories. And so suppose that we have a conformal field theory in D dimensions, then the duality tells us that this is dual to a theory, a gravitational theory in ADS space-time in one higher dimension. And this is anti-de Sitter space-time, and it's a hyperbolic space-time, and so its boundary is actually flat. And so that's sort of what I try to draw here schematically. And it turns out that the emergent extra direction that takes you into the bulk of this space-time can be interpreted as an RG scale, as an energy scale. And so moving along this extra direction takes you along the RG flow, where you flow from your UV theory on the boundary to the infrared theory in the bulk. And so this is the picture for a conformal field theory on the boundary at zero chemical potential. So I depicted here the Dirac cone, which is a well-known conformal field theory to us. And so a conformal field theory, although it's gapless, it's actually not a compressible phase because dq, d mu actually vanishes due to the vanishing density of states here near the Dirac point. And to study a compressible phase, we want to turn on a chemical potential in this conformal field theory so that we get a Fermi surface. And so on the boundary side, we add a chemical potential. And now the dictionary of holography tells us that in the bulk, this is dual to having an electric flux coming out of the bulk. And so there's an electric field in the bulk. And of course, this electric field has to be sourced by some charged particles, by some charges. Okay, so what is the source of this electric field? So we can sort of distinguish two types of sources for this electric field. One is when we have charged particles, fermionic particles that live in the bulk. Or the other possibility is that we have some charge that's hidden behind the horizon, so some charged black hole sitting in the interior. And with these two charge sources, we can distinguish three different phases or three different possibilities. And one we call cohesive, which is the case when all this flux is sourced by charged particles that live in the bulk. Or we could have a fully fractionalized phase, as we call it. So at this point, that's just a name. But that's the case where we refer to when there's no charged particles that live in the bulk, but all the charge is hidden behind the horizon. And then finally, there's the possibility that we have a combination of the two, and so we call that partially fractionalized. So part of the electric field is sourced by charged particles in the bulk, and the rest is hidden behind the horizon.
If I was just enumerating possibilities, you might have other charged fields, say a charged scalar in the bulk. Is that just not in this?
Yeah, so since we're discussing zero temperature, then I would guess that that would condense, and it wouldn't give rise to a compressible phase. So it would break the U1, and which is not what we want to do. So that's why I restrict to two fermion particles. Right. Okay, so this, the simplest theory that we can write down in the bulk that would be dual to a compressible phase is the Einstein-Maxwell theory. So as I told you, the conformal field theory is dual to having an ADS space, and that's the solution of this part of the action, where this is the Ricci scalar, and this is some cosmological constant. So this gives rise to this hyperbolically curved space-time. But now we also have this flux, so there's also a Maxwell term. So this is sort of the simplest thing that you can study. And it turns out that the bulk solution to this action is what's called an extremal black hole. And that has a slightly peculiar property. So it's a charged black hole, but at zero temperature, it still has a finite area. And so since the area of a black hole is dual to its entropy, it has a zero temperature entropy. And that's not something that we typically see in condensed matter systems, of course. And so it turns out that there's a relatively simple solution to this, and that's to include another field, which we call the dilaton field. And so this is a neutral field. And so now we slightly expand the action to include this dilaton field, and now it looks like this. So there's still the Ricci scalar, now there's this scalar field. And there's a potential for this scalar field, and it also couples to the Maxwell term. And so this, okay, I always call this field a dilaton, which is not strictly speaking correct, because a dilaton, I think, is reserved this name for a massless field, and we will actually, it will be massive. So, but I hope you will forgive me that I will just call it a dilaton field. And so but we will have a mass for this dilaton field, and this mass is related to the scaling dimension of the dual operator in the conformal field theory. And by tuning the mass of the dilaton, we can make sure that it's dual to a relevant operator. And so when we start in the UV with this turning on this relevant operator, by including this massive neutral scalar, we expect to flow to some different infrared theory, right? Because when you turn on something relevant in the UV, your RG flow will take you to your infrared theory. And so that's what we're going to study. But just before I go there, I still need one more ingredient, and that's that I want to include explicit fermions in the bulk, because I want to be able to describe these different phases. So I need some particles that could source the charge as well, right? And so the way I decide to do this is in the fluid limit. So this last term in the action is now the pressure of some fermionic fluid. The pressure is given by the charge, the energy density and the charge density of this fluid, and it's controlled by the local chemical potential. And this fluid description of the fermions is an approximation, but this approximation allows us to include the back reaction of this fluid onto the metric. Okay, so now to study this theory, what are we going to do? Yes.
No,
it's a different solution.
So there's no black hole.
Well, there will be a no singularity.
Well, there's a finite area.
No, that's gone now.
That's
yeah.
Stable.
Well, it it's called the null singularity. And so if you turn on a little bit of temperature, it will be, again, a black hole.
So this still field is relevant perturbation in the infrared. It's including the dilaton field, the change in the infrared problem.
Yes. Yes. That's right. So we turn it on in the UV, and so there it's relevant. It's dual to a relevant operator in our boundary theory, and so we'll see that it changes the infrared solution.
So you mentioned there are no singularities, but that's to say that if I compute curvature invariance, it will all be small, or I can make them controllably small with infrared.
I think that's right.
So another thing is that if the dilaton field have a very heavy mass, that means that it's irrelevant. So you need a dilaton field with a smaller mass to make it relevant.
Yes.
Okay. So relevant, can you say the relevant really means if you change the black, if you destroy the black hole, then that means it's relevant. You know, without dilaton field, you have a black hole with entropy. So if the dilaton mass is small enough, you actually destroy this black hole.
Well, yeah. So the reason why you don't get this black hole anymore is because the dilaton couples to this F squared term. So basically, this when there's some flux coming out of some area, you need some area to support this flux, right? But due to the dilaton, we will see that this actually goes to zero for the dilaton solution, and then you can actually shrink this area where the flux is coming out. So there's still a finite flux coming out of a sort of a very small area. And so that's how this dilaton solves the problem of having to have this finite area even at zero temperature.
And so the fields, sorry to keep saying this, so as you were saying, something has to shrink in the middle, right? So if you still have a charge, wouldn't you expect to have an electric field and so flux? And so typically the stress energy terms of that thing would diverge. If you still have a finite flux close to the origin, as you say. And if you have a divergent stress energy tensor large, then you would expect a huge back reaction, and so the singularity in the infrared.
Yeah, maybe when I show you the solution, you will be able to tell me what's precisely the right picture. But I think you're right that, so this is a crude approximation of what the solution will be. It might be that if you zoom in onto this into the singularity, that it will actually, so it's known, I think, that these solutions are unstable towards forming again an ADS2 cross R2 solution. But for this moment, I think that, okay, I don't want to go into that too much.
So basically, as you may relate to this, in the infrared, this Z fine would go to zero, right? That's a limit.
That's a possibility. So we're going to discuss different possibilities, and that will be different phases.
But the dilaton becomes relevant means Z fine goes to zero.
No. So what I
when in the infrared.
No, that's not precisely what I mean by it. So I think it will become clear in just a few moments. So, this is the setup. So we'll have, from this action, we can obtain the equations of motion, and we will be able to solve those in the UV and in the infrared. So for very small and very large distance from the boundary. And in the UV, we will, of course, find the ADS4 solution, which is dual to the conformal field theory that we started with. But now, due to the fact that there we turned on this relevant operator, we will flow to different infrared solutions. And it turns out that we can find three different infrared solutions. There's a Lipschitz solution, a fractionalized solution, and a cohesive solution. And I'll discuss in detail what these are. And we will find these different solutions depending on what the coupling is to this relevant operator dual to the dilaton. So as we tune this coupling, we can really explore this whole phase diagram with these different phases. So in pictorially, we start with this conformal field theory, we turn on the chemical potential, and we introduced some relevant perturbation. Then near the boundary, it just still looks like our conformal field theory, so this ADS4. But then in the infrared, we have different possible solutions. And we will be able to connect these numerically by solving the equations of motion numerically. So this is the setup. I start with this general form for the metric. And so L is the ADS radius. And we'll solve for the functions F and G. And then the Maxwell potential will just have a T component, so corresponding to the electric field. And there will be this local chemical potential with which will govern the properties of the fluid. And now we choose the dilaton potential to have this form and the dilaton coupling to have this form. And so the numbers here are basically for numerical convenience, but this form is what will give us the whole phase diagram. And just to make sure we're all on the same page, my convention is such that this R, the emergent direction, goes to zero in the UV and to infinity in the infrared. So it's maybe a little bit counterintuitive, but it just sort of measures the distance from the boundary.
Why did we choose these potentials?
Okay, so the potential... okay.
I mean, like, why did we choose a conscious between the other functions?
So I choose this precise form such that in the UV, phi will go to zero, and then it will be the dilaton will be this massive neutral scalar with a certain mass, such that it's relevant, such that it's dual to a relevant operator.
But I suppose the point is also you can find an exact solution to this potential.
Yes. Yeah, so the precise numbers are mostly there for numerical convenience. But
I'm sorry, am I supposed to understand the potential V here as the relay potential energy? Because it's divert goes to, it's unstable, right, in large phi limit. So why is that?
Yeah, so in the large phi limit, it behaves precisely as the potential would for a dilaton field that you would obtain from dimensional reduction. So it's like a Liouville potential, I think. So, yeah, it may look a little bit funny, but this is sort of the standard way that people use this. So this, I don't really want you to look at this in too much detail, but just to show you that when we vary the action, we can obtain these equations of motion for all the fields that I introduced. And so we can find asymptotic solutions for these equations of motion. And so that's what I will discuss now. So there's a solution that we find as R goes to zero, so in the UV. And then there will be three solutions that we can find in the infrared. And so the three different cases will correspond to different asymptotic behavior of phi. So it either goes to a constant, to plus infinity, or to minus infinity. And then the full box solution can be obtained by connecting these solutions numerically.
So maybe this potential truth is a special form. If you choose some arbitrary form that works, so what is the meaning of choosing this particular form?
Yeah.
What is the physics input here?
So the physics input is that on the boundaries, I want it to look like the potential for some massive scalar,
yeah.
So that I can interpret it as turning on a relevant operator,
yeah.
On the boundary theory, and in the infrared. We want it to look like the dilaton potential because there we know that, so that's this, that it will go as e to the power alpha phi, because then we know that we have this fractionalized solution which doesn't have a zero temperature entropy.
But suppose you choose some arbitrary other potential, what that means, you know? That that means you're describing different physical system or that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So why don't you choose some other potential, like a phi squared, that's a harmonic potential, you know?
Yeah, so, well, I mean, it looks like phi squared in the UV.
Yeah.
So, but I guess the most general case, you may want to do that. I think we, of course, in the end, you should try to get it from string theory. And that will tell you what is realistic. And here, I think we didn't do that, but we sort of did the second best thing. We looked at that the limiting cases are things that do come out of string theory.
If you do not turn on the chemical potential, how do the solutions look like with this potential?
If you do not turn on the chemical potential.
So what sort of things like physics do you get from the potential?
I'm not sure actually. I don't know.
It's only switching the charge. That's when you switch.
Yeah, turn the charge to zero.
Just the back of the solutions with no charge.
No, just
but it still looks the same?
No, that'll be very, very different.
Right.
We don't try to be
happy
to go zero.
Yeah. Yeah, F equals zero, but V does not equal zero.
Right. So just some scalar in ADS space.
Okay.
Normally, I were to think in terms of the string theory, I would be concerned about this log R behavior, right? Because if it is a dilaton, which it looks like a dilaton, then I would know that I would have to identify it with a string coupling. And so even though your curvature invariance might be small or, you know, under control, the fact that you have this particular behavior in a string coupling would suggest that I have to worry. I cannot, strictly speaking, trust my string theory picture, but I guess you would say that this is just a phenomenological model.
Yes, that's what it is at this point.
Right.
Yes.
So then, yeah, and in that case, I would not have a clear picture. Where would I see this thing? That should I worry about the scalar field behaving like log R in the infrared or not?
Yeah. So well, we are at the moment. So at this point, for this work, I don't think I have a good answer to your question, but these theories do arise from dimension from Kaluza-Klein reductions, and maybe in that case you might trust it a little bit better.
If I see in my solution, I can trust them if they come in the string theory, but I would not trust my supergravity approximation, which is what you do, if I would find out that my dilaton behaves like log R.
It's only the main dilaton has nothing to do.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's what I'm
saying.
Okay.
Well, maybe I'll just go on and you can tell me later a bit more about these worries. Okay, so in the UV, so R goes to zero and the dilaton also goes to zero, and so the potential looks like this. And so you can read off the mass from this term. And it has this form. And that means that the dilaton is dual to an operator that has scaling dimension 2. And so this is a relevant operator. And the asymptotic form of the dilaton now looks like this, where O is the operator that the dilaton is dual to and has scaling dimension 2. And phi naught is the source for this operator. So phi naught will basically be the thing that we will be, that I will call the relevant coupling, and that will be the parameter that we will be varying to obtain the full phase diagram. And so in the UV, as I said, we have the ADS4 metric, and this is the metrical potential looks like at the boundary, and so that's is where my chemical potential and charge conditions come in. Okay, so now, as I said, there's various solutions in the infrared. And the first solution is also a scale invariant solution. It's the Lifshitz solution. And that's in the case that the dilaton actually goes to a constant in the infrared. And so the metric then takes this form. And so it's basically completely governed by the Z, which is called, which is the dynamical critical exponent. And as you can see, the dilaton goes to a constant. And so for this solution, you can show that the flux vanishes in the infrared. And so that means that all the charge has to be carried by the fluid. And for those of you who are familiar with it, this is basically then the electron star solution of hard knowing company. And so this, it turns out that this Lifshitz solution actually has a relevant perturbation. And that means that to hit this solution from the UV, we have to fine tune a parameter. Because if you want to hit this point along an RG flow, you have to make sure that you turn the coupling to this relevant operator to zero. So that means that you have to fine tune. And indeed, what we find is that there's only one value of this relevant coupling phi naught that allows you to flow precisely to this Lifshitz solution. And so this Lifshitz solution turns out to characterize the phase transition between two other phases, two different phases. And so one of these phases is the fractionalized phase. So that's the second infrared solution, where the dilaton goes as log r. So it goes to plus infinity as r goes to infinity. And in that case, the effective Maxwell coupling becomes very small. And so we obtain this hyperscaling violation metric. And for this case, you can show that the flux actually goes to a constant as r goes to infinity. And so that means that this electric flux must be sourced by some charge that's hidden behind the horizon. And so the local chemical potential goes to zero in the infrared, so there's no fluid present in the infrared. But this solution we can actually obtain for a whole range of values of phi naught. And so it's a class of solutions, so it's like a phase. And although there's no fluid in the infrared, this fluid can be present in the bulk because this local chemical potential can go above the mass of the fluid in the bulk when you integrate out this solution to the UV. And so then you will also have some fluid present in the bulk. And so this solution actually describes two phases, the fully fractionalized phase, in which case there's no fluid in the bulk, and the partially fractionalized phase, where there's the total charge is just the sum of the charge that's hidden behind the horizon and the charge that's carried by the fluid. And so as we tune this relevant coupling phi naught, some charge can leak out of the horizon. And you can go from the fully to the partially fractionalized phase.
Why do you call this fractionalized?
So we call it fractionalized because we want to think of the particles that are hidden behind the horizon as maybe dual to fermionic degrees of freedom that are coupled to gauge fields. So such a theory would arise in a slave particle construction.
So the Fermi surface of particle always coupled to gauge field in this case.
That's what we believe. Yeah. Okay. I have to do a lot more to convince you of that, I think, but. Yeah, that is the origin of this name.
Can I ask, is the horizon at r equals infinity, or was it before? Oh, so on the metric that you had before, that kind of looked singular, though. But is that what you were calling the null singularity?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Can you call it mu naught rather than m?
Oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, m is the mass of the fluid. So this is the fluid description, that there's basically a gap to populate this fluid, and when the chemical potential goes above that gap, then you start to populate the fluid. So then the charge density and energy density are non-zero.
And how do you determine the mass of the fluid?
That's a parameter that we put in.
Can I ask?
Yeah, so things will depend on what this parameter is.
Is the assumption that the fluid is uniformly distributed in the bulk? Uniform density.
So the density is determined by the shape of this mu local, the local chemical potential, which is a function of the vector potential and the Blackening factor.
So that's self-consistently being solved.
Right.
As a profile of fluid wants to take.
Precisely. Yes.
Purely radial. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So the second solution, as I said, is this fractionalized solution, and this is sort of a cartoon picture of that. So here there's flux all the way to infinity. So in this case, all the charge is sourced by this black hole, and in this case, there's also some charge behind the horizon, but there's also this fluid in the bulk. And so that's sort of a picture that you don't have to take too seriously, but of the fractionalized and the partially fractionalized phases. Okay, so as promised, there's this third solution. And so that's when you take phi going to minus log r, so to minus infinity as r goes to infinity. And in that case, the coupling goes to zero. And it turns out that the flux goes to zero in that case. So that means that all the charge has to be sourced by the fluid. And so this solution is what's called a domain wall solution. So as you go to infinity, this factor actually goes to zero. And so this part of the metric sort of shrinks to zero. So it sort of smoothly caps off.
Usually it's not smooth cap off. Usually
oh.
It's singular. You're saying in your case it is smooth? If I try to shrink precisely something like this in a different fashion in a Kastner-like solution, it's supposed to shrink. And usually I have a singularity.
Okay. I would have to look that up. Okay, so ignore that then. I'm not sure. It caps off.
Well, there really, I mean, there are lots of things that look at horizon things like where factors like that can talk. Are you telling us that it's geodesically complete, or do you know? Or
I think it is, yes. Or okay, so this is for me a little bit tricky terrain, as you probably have
okay,
but yeah. But I've compared it to what good people call it the domain wall solution, and it's the same. So, okay, well, that doesn't say anything. So in the infrared, the local chemical potential goes to a constant which is larger than the mass. So this fluid also goes all the way into the infrared. And so this is what we call a cohesive solution to distinguish it from the fractionalized solution. And so the picture is something like this. So all the charge is sourced by this bluish fluid. Okay, so then by connecting these infrared solutions numerically to our UV solution, we can construct a full phase diagram. And what we find is that in the UV, we start with our CFT, so the dynamical critical exponent is 1. And depending on what the value of this relevant coupling is, we either flow to this cohesive phase. And if we fine-tune it, then we flow to the Lifshitz phase, which has a dynamical critical exponent that's larger than 1. And on the other side, we'll flow to these fractionalized phases. And so this Lifshitz point really characterizes the phase transition between the cohesive and the fractionalized phase. And so here are the cartoon pictures of the different solutions again. So these are the different phases. And so what we can measure for these solutions is the ratio of the charge hidden behind the horizon to the total charge of the theory. And what we find is indeed what I already told you. So basically it's zero in the cohesive phase. So here there's this relevant coupling that we're tuning. And then this is the Lifshitz solution. So there it's also zero. And then as we go beyond that, charge starts to be hidden behind the horizon. The horizon forms, and then at some point you hit this fully fractionalized phase where all the charge is hidden behind the horizon.
When you're saying a horizon, it is a zero area, or?
Yes, I believe so.
So it's a zero temperature, so it's still zero temperature.
You're yeah.
Talking about zero temperature, but some kind of charge is still present.
Yes. And.
Sorry. Could you give a description of the event that you're using? Would be that there is a conserved current demand. The boundary whose two-point function is controlled by the Gauss internal final positive, you say, in case the internal final negative.
Yes. That's what you interpret from this picture.
So you said that there is coupling between dilaton and kinetic temperature. I just don't understand what that means. So does it mean that the two-point function of current is a function of the relevant coupling?
I'm sorry, I don't really understand the question. I'm sorry. Okay, so this the Lipschitz solution sort of describes. What type of phase transition we have between these different phases. And it turns out that it, depending on what parameters we choose for the fluid, we can either have a first-order phase transition or a second-order phase transition. So here I plot the free energy for the solution. And so here, so the blue one is the cohesive solution and the red one is the fractionalized solution. And so here there's a first order transition, and the Lipschitz solution is actually unstable in that case. Whereas here there's a smooth. I mean, the free energy is not, there's no kink. And so this turns out to be a second order phase transition. And the charge, the fraction of the charge, sort of behaves like an order parameter in this case. So here, there's a jump in the fraction of the charge that's hidden behind the horizon, whereas here it goes smoothly to zero. Okay, so let me now turn to a slightly different topic, which concerns Fermi surfaces and the Ludinger theorem. So what we have seen is this cohesive phase. And in this case, the fermions can actually be studied in the bulk. And it turns out that you can show that the Ludinger theorem is obeyed for this phase. So there are Fermi surfaces, and the area enclosed by these Fermi surfaces add up to the total charge carried by the fluid. And so in the end, we think that this cohesive phase is Fermi liquid-like. But the fractionalized phase, the charge is all hidden behind the horizon, and so we don't really know if we can, if there's a Fermi surface that's related to the charge that's hidden behind the horizon. And so the question is would there possibly be a hidden Fermi surface? And so to try to make some progress on this question, we decided to study holographic entanglement entropy. And so. We find that this can provide an indirect probe of the Fermi surface. So let me briefly remind you of entanglement entropy. So suppose that you have a system that you can divide up into two regions, region A and the rest of the system is region B. Then the reduced density matrix of region A is found by tracing out all the degrees of freedom in system B. And then the entanglement entropy is defined as the von Neumann entropy of this reduced density matrix. And as you probably all know, the entanglement entropy obeys a boundary law for a gapped system. And So what I mean by a boundary law is that it scales as the perimeter of this region A. So P is the perimeter of this region A. And of sort of a picture you can have in mind, if you have a gap system, then you have a finite correlation length. And so as you grow your region A, at some point, degrees of freedom only close enough to the boundary within this correlation length can still be entangled to degrees of freedom outside this region. And that's why in gapped systems with a finite correlation length, you would have this boundary law. But for systems with a Fermi surface, we know that there's actually a logarithmic violation of this boundary law. And so the entanglement entropy takes on this form. Here Kf is the Fermi wave vector. And so it appears in this specific way in the entanglement entropy. And this is something that we would now like to exploit. So in holography, there's also a notion of entanglement entropy as proposed by Ryu and Takayanagi, and that is to relate the entanglement entropy of this region A to the minimal surface connecting this region within the bulk. We've computed precisely this minimal surface to study the holographic entanglement entropy of the fractionalized phases. And so now we didn't do this precisely for the theory that I was discussing before, but for a slightly more general case where there's no fluid now and there's the rest is sort of the same, but we now choose the potential to have this form and the coupling is still the same. And so the solution that you find here in the infrared takes on this form, and it's called this hyperscaling violation metric, where as you can see from this scale transformation, Z is the dynamical critical exponent, and theta is what's called the hyperscaling violation exponent. And these Z and theta sort of really characterize the solution, and they depend on the dimension and on alpha and beta, the parameters in the dilaton potential and the coupling. So it turns out that for a specific choice of alpha and beta, such that this theta is equal to d minus 1, we find a log violation of the area law. And in d equal to 2, it takes precisely this form that hopefully is to you similar to what I showed before. And so Q in this case is the charge that's hidden behind horizon. And so from this form of the entanglement entropy, we could infer that this could arise when you have a hidden Fermi surface with a Fermi wave vector that's the square root of Q. And that precisely matches what you would expect from Ludinger's theorem in D equals 2, where the area enclosed by the Fermi surface goes as Kf squared. Maybe in view of time, let me skip this. So
that's coefficient of all the matches, or it's just a scaling matches? The Ludinger theorem really is the area is exactly
That's right. No, there.
Here, the coefficient can be not equal to 1.
Yeah, but although these coefficients, it will depend on what kind of entangling region you choose on the boundary, right? And that it does have the right properties as a function of that. But yeah. Okay. So we found this different compressible phases, and we sort of classified them using charge fractionalization, and we argued that this cohesive phase is Fermi liquid-like, but that these fractionless spaces actually violate Luttinger's theorem. But then using holographic entanglement entropy as a probe for hidden Fermi surface, we saw that for certain parameters of the theory, the Luttinger theorem might actually be restored through this hidden Fermi surface. And so in that case, we would want to identify the partially fractionalized phase with an FL star type phase and the fully fractionalized phase with the non-Fermi liquid.
Do you have other solution? Do you have to pick this alpha beta to be precisely the value to have this scaling?
They have to obey a precise ratio.
I see. If you pick alpha beta to be some other value, do you get a different scaling? Or?
Yes.
I see.
So yeah, I'll come back to that actually in a bit.
In this fractionalized phase, this dilaton goes to constant or?
No, it causes log r.
Log r, so it diverges.
Yes.
That means gauge coupling is very weak. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then the question is there finite entropy density or?
No, there's not.
But flux is still so.
There's. So there is also, so as you tune these parameters alpha and beta, you can also have the Reisner-Nordström solution. So that's, it's part of it. So that one does have, of course, some entropy. But the other solutions have less entropy at zero temperature.
When phi is log r, that means g is very large, right?
Yes, that's right, yes.
That means if you have electric flux coming behind the horizon, there's a large backreaction.
Yeah, that's what it also
then
said.
Don't we expect some finite area horizon?
Yeah, so I think that the study that I did doesn't capture that, I guess, but what we argued is that if you turn on some temperature, then the solution is not singular, and then it's okay. But I don't really, I think you're right. We probably have to understand that's a subtlety. That
this entanglement entropy calculation is at zero, isn't it, at zero temperature?
Yes, yes.
And then you have finite entropy density and also on top of that, you computed entanglement.
No, in this case, in the cases that we looked at, there's no finite entanglement entropy. It's, there's no entropy, no zero temperature entropy. So it's just the entanglement entropy.
I thought you have zero entropy density only when phi goes to minus log.
Yeah, so in the second part of the talk, that's the case I restrict to. So
that's the limit where g goes to
infinity.
Zero.
Infinity.
G.
Right.
Infinity or minus?
Oh. Z blows up, the coupling.
Z blows up.
Yes.
And you're saying there's no entropy density.
Okay, maybe we can discuss later. 10 minutes. Okay, so maybe I went a little bit quick, but before I close, I just wanted to mention some recent developments and some outlook. So one thing is that people have looked at if there's an order parameter for the charge fractionalization that I discussed. So as you remember, the fraction of the charge behind the horizon seemed almost to behave like an order parameter. But the established order parameters such as the Polyakov loop and the Wilson loop and entanglement entropy all have nice interpretations in the bulk as realizations of some surface in the bulk. And so the question is there also some order parameter like that for a charge fractionalization? And so the proposal, recent proposal is that you can define this order parameter as the flux through some minimal surface. And it turns out that this thing has different scaling. So it has a volume scaling in the case of this deconfined fractionalized phase, whereas it vanishes in the cohesive case. And so an open question is, I guess, what this order parameter would correspond to in the field theory side. And another thing is that, of course, we've now seen that the entanglement entropy seems consistent with a hidden Fermi surface for certain theories. But of course, we need more evidence that this entanglement entropy is really due to a Fermi surface and not just some other thing. And so the first results seem to be actually not in agreement with this interpretation. Hartnell and Shagulian looked at the spectral density of the transverse current, and they didn't find any low energy modes at finite momentum, which is what you would expect when you have a Fermi surface. And so now in 1D, there have been recent results on probing Friedel oscillations, which is also, of course, a key signature of a Fermi surface using monopoles, and would be very interesting to generalize that to higher dimensions. And then in that case, there's also the question of whether these Friedel oscillations correspond to one very large Fermi surface or actually a large number of order one Fermi surfaces. And again, maybe entanglement entropy may distinguish these different cases. And finally, it might be interesting to explore the connection to dimensional reduction of pure gravitational theories to see if they maybe have some interpretation of where this entanglement comes from.
This is the near horizon behavior where phi goes as log r, isn't it? That's what we're
thinking. Right. Yeah, so the theory there can actually be obtained from dimensional reduction of pure gravity theory. One other thing that I briefly want to mention is that, as I said, so there's a specific choice for the dilaton that will give you this log violation, but in general, it can exhibit all kinds of violations of the boundary law, all the way up to volume scaling, which is precisely this case when you get the extreme Reisner-Nordström solution back. And so there, of course, we interpret this entropy as due to ground state degeneracy. And so a question you might want to ask is what, in these intermediate cases, can we also attribute this to a ground state entropy, a ground state degeneracy, but now with some anomalous scaling. And so we actually looked at that, studying just some simple model where we could tune the ground state degeneracy. And we saw that we can indeed reproduce anomalous violations of the boundary law, but only over some finite scale if we really wanted to impose a local locality on the model, sorry, so local interactions, no long range interactions. And so it could be due to some ground state degeneracy, but it doesn't imply it also. And so another possibility that would give rise to these weird violations of entanglement entropy would be if you have a fractal Fermi surface. And that can be obtained if you allow for infinite range interactions. So this maybe is a little bit sort of the opposite direction where we try to see if the things that we find in holography can inspire to think about new phases in condensed matter. And so with this, let me conclude. So I discussed compressible phases in holography, and we found for the Einstein-Maxwell-Dilleton fluid theory that there was a phase diagram where the Lifshitz solution characterizes the phase transition between the cohesive and the fractionalized phase. And I draw some similarities with the Fermi liquid, the FL star, and non-Fermi liquid phases in condensed matter. And to do that, we used holography as an indirect probe for Fermi surface, holographic entanglement entropy. And so indeed, we found that this was consistent for a certain theory with Luttinger's theorem. And but of course, this is only the beginning, or just a very small step, and we need a lot more evidence before we can really make some definite statements. Thank you for it.
Have many questions during the talk, but maybe a few more.
I suppose I was wondering, I mean, is it okay just to work at infinitesimal temperature as opposed to zero temperature? Because if we worked at infinitesimal temperature, we'd keep a small horizon, there wouldn't be any singularities in the world. If you have any ones take T to absolute zero, that we run into these singularities, and maybe we could just work that small. Is that good enough?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what that will do to the entanglement entropy computation, but definitely for the first part of the talk, for the phase diagram, that would be fine.
That should change.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say that's so problematic, is you're still going to, if it's infinitesimal and you're claiming it's going out of the singular solution, at a minimum you're getting large effects.
Yeah. So if you're trying to look at what happens as you take the limit of the temperature goes to zero and try and understand the limiting behavior, that might be a more rigorous way than just...
If the zero temperature things made sense, which... I would go and suggest at least a lot of these don't, but...
Yeah, so this would be a way of sort of trying to put that on the firm footing there.
Well, it's not having a cross conversation.
So, okay, going back to this finite entropy question. So, one way to avoid finite entropy is to have charged fluid in the border, right? So that flux doesn't come out of the horizon. That's one thing. The other thing is to have some Dilaton-like field to make Z goes to zero in the infrared limit. Is that the only?
I think Z has to go to infinity.
Not zero.
No. So Z, so the effect of Maxwell coupling goes to zero, but Z is multiplies F squared.
So G's you need to define as in front of your Maxwell.
Right, yes.
Isn't that if G is large, electric flux gives you large vacuum energy?
But it's 1 over G squared times F squared, right?
Oh, it's 1 over G, not G.
No, Z. No, it is Z, but the coupling is 1 over.
Right.
Yeah. So if Z becomes big, the coupling becomes small. Yeah, and that's the case where that we were looking at. Yes.
More questions? No. Okay, so let's thank you again.